We finished up chapter 3 this past Sunday night, so we'll pick up tonight here in 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 1. It says, "Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elisha." Now this chapter here is pretty much devoted to the story of two ladies that have connection with Elisha, or that Elisha does something for. And the interesting thing is the names of these women are not given. You don't find the name for either one mentioned here in the passage at all. It just says in verse 1, a certain woman. And what we're told is that she was married to one of the sons of the prophets. Already we've seen in our study. Thank you, son. Already we've seen mentioned these sons of the prophets in our study. And these were men who, at least some of them had wives. We see that from the text right here. And this woman here was married to one of those sons of the prophets. And she cries unto Elisha and says, "Thy servant, my husband, is dead." So this is a widow lady. Her husband has passed, don't know how, don't know when, have no idea how long it's been, but she's a widow lady. And she says, "Thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord." So obviously this was a man that Elisha knew personally. And his name is not given. As far as I can tell, none of the names of these sons of the prophets are given in the scripture. They're just mentioned different times. But for him to know this man feared the Lord, he had to have some personal knowledge of this man. He had to have some type of interaction, some type of relationship with him. And the lady is reminding Elisha of this. She says, thou knowest, that thy servant did fear the Lord. And she continues by saying, "And the creditor is come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen." So they had two children, two boys, and they obviously owed a debt, because she talks here about a creditor. And that's going to be somebody that they have borrowed from. And now that he's out of the way, now that the husband has passed and this lady's a widow, evidently she's having trouble paying back the debt that was owed. And because she's behind on her payments and not able to come up with what she needs to pay, this person, she says, is going to come and take her two sons. And they're going to be payment for the debt owed. They're going to become his bondmen. They would basically be slaves is what they would be, and they're going to be payment for the debt that was owed by her husband. So you can see the situation this woman's in. This is quite a predicament, right? I mean, that'd be a bad place to be, where you know that you can't pay your bills, and we're not talking about somebody coming and getting your car. You know, modern day, you can't pay your car and pay for your car, and they just come get your car, and you know, take a hit on your credit, or whatever the case. They come and get something like that. We're not talking about that kind of situation. We're talking about somebody coming and taking your children, two sons. And there probably wouldn't have been a whole lot that she could have done about it. So she's in quite a predicament. She's got a very difficult situation. And you can understand now why she goes to Elisha and why she's telling him about this situation. She's trying to get some help here. I don't think she's necessarily reaching out to Elisha for money or anything like that. She just knows that he's God's prophet, God's man. So she's going to him for any kind of help or advice that he might could give. And so Elisha said unto her, "What shall I do for thee? Tell me. What hast thou in the house?" Why would he ask that? What do you have in your house? Well, perhaps he's thinking that she may have something in her house that is of value that she could sell that would help her to at least, if nothing else, get caught up on what she owed. Maybe that's what he's thinking. In fact, I believe that's exactly why he asked that. And And I'll show you why I say that as we continue on in the passage. But he's not trying to be nosy. He's trying to come up with a solution for her problem. He's trying to figure a way that she could honestly, in an honest way, get caught up on what she owed, or maybe even pay off the entire debt so that she doesn't have to lose her two sons. So he asked her what she has, and she said, "Thine handmaid hath not anything in the house save a pot of oil." Now, I don't think it means that she had absolutely nothing, and it was just, you know, just an empty house anywhere. I think it's probably more along the lines of, we don't have anything of real value in the house. We're down just to the bare essentials here. And I guess maybe it could mean that she didn't have anything at all except that, but that would mean she's sleeping on the floor and she doesn't have anything to cook on, you know. So in my mind, anyway, I'm thinking she's saying we're down to basically nothing. We don't have anything of real value that we could sell. She says, "We just got this pot of oil. It's all I got here." So maybe she didn't have anything else. Then he said, "Go, borrow thee vessels abroad of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels. Borrow not a few." Don't get just a few. Get a whole bunch. Just get a whole bunch of empty vessels, stuff that you can put things in or put something in. "Then when thou art come in, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and shalt pour out into all those vessels, and thou shalt set aside that which is full." So go out and get all these empty vessels, many as you can get. Come into the house, shut the door where it's just you and your sons, and then take that pot of oil and start pouring that oil into each one of those empty vessels. And whenever one gets full, set it aside and carry on. Set it aside, carry on. That's what he's telling her to do. Now, she's just got one pot of oil, right? So if she goes out and borrows a whole bunch of empty vessels, basically, if something doesn't happen, she's just going to pour what she's got into one more pot, and that's going to be the end, right? So obviously, something's going to have to happen. There's going to have to be some kind of miracle, or this isn't going to take very long, and it's really going to be a waste of time to go out and borrow all these empty vessels from her neighbors. What you're fixing to read is what you read many times in the Bible. You're going to read a miracle. Remember earlier on, whenever Elijah was still on earth, and they were in the midst of that 3.5 year famine where it didn't rain, and he had been down by the brook, and finally the brook dried up, and the Lord told him to go to Zarephath because there was a widow there that would sustain him. Remember, he meets that woman. And when he meets her, she's out gathering sticks to go in and build a fire to make the final meal for her and her son. They're going to eat it, and then they're going to die. She's just got that barrel of meal and the very bottom of it. I mean, she's literally scraping the bottom of the barrel. And he tells her to make that cake for him first. And if she does that, that barrel of meal will never run out. You remember what happens? The rest of that time, every time she reached into the barrel, there was meal in the barrel, every time. You know what that was? That's a miracle. That's God providing something where there is nothing. You realize that God doesn't have to have anything to perform a miracle other than our obedience and faith. That's all he's got to have. He can take you. You can be down to where you have nothing, but if you will obey, we sing the song, "Trust and Obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus." If you'll trust him and do what he says, you'll see him make something out of nothing. You'll see him perform an absolute miracle. You can have nothing or basically nothing, and if you'll just trust him and obey him, he'll perform a miracle. Like in this situation right here. If you get to thinking about it, the Lord could have just took care of the woman's debt. You know, he could have just said, "There it is," and gave her whatever amount she needed to pay off this creditor. That's not how he did this. Elisha tells her to go do something. go out and borrow all these empty vessels, stuff that you can put things in or put something in. Now, there had to be some trust and there had to be some obedience on her part, right? Had to be. She could have fussed with him, like most of us probably would have. Well, all I got is one pot of oil. Why am I wasting my time walking out here beating on doors, getting these pots from my neighbors? I ain't going to aggravate them. All I got is one pot of oil. You know how it is. She doesn't do that, though. See, if a person will just trust the Lord and do what he says, they'll see God work. And that's what she does. She goes out and gets them. She brings them in. Look at verse 5. So she went from him and shut the door upon her and upon her sons, who brought the vessels to her. So her boys went out and get the vessels, bring them in, and she poured out. She starts doing what she's been told to do. She's just trusting and obeying, trusting and obeying. Just got one little pot, she starts pouring out. And much to her surprise, guess what happens? She fills up one empty vessel, sets it aside, just like Elisha said. She keeps pouring. Guess what happened? That second vessel filled up. She sets it aside. She keeps on pouring. The third one fills up. And she just goes on and on and on. And remember now, he said don't get just a few. So she's got a whole bunch of empty vessels. And she just keeps filling them up and filling them up out of one pot of oil. Now, how many of us understand that ain't normal? That's a miracle of God is what that is. But it took her obedience and her trust. God's going to do that to us in life. He's going to put us in those situations, and it's a situation where he could just reach down and he could take care of it without anything done by us whatsoever. But I've been around, I've only been here 44 years, but I'm telling you, I've been around long enough to know that's not how God does things. You don't read it in the Bible, and I ain't ever experienced that in my life. God will do miracles. He will do miracles, but I can tell you he's going to require something of you when he performs that miracle. There's going to be some trust and some obedience on your part, and then you'll see God do something. That's how that thing works. You say, why does he do that? Well, it's a test sometimes, just a test. Sometimes it's to toughen us up a little bit, to teach us things. There's a whole lot of reasons why he does it. But really and truly, I don't need to worry about why he does it. I just need to know that everything he does is right. Everything he does has a purpose. Whether I understand that purpose or not, that's not up to me. What's on me is God tells me to do something, I have to do it. And that goes back to that thing, you know, we talked about the tithing and the giving thing a while ago. That's a matter of trusting and obeying. You know, you get in a situation where you don't feel like you have enough money to pay your bills if you give your tithe. So you know what God says? Give it anyway. Amen? God doesn't change that tithe in principle when you have a hard month and it's hard to pay your bills. But I'll tell you what you do. I'll give you God's word on it. You give your tithe to the Lord, and I don't care how low down it is, he'll take care of you. Anybody in here ever tithe faithfully and gave faithfully like you're supposed to and not had God meet your needs? I never have seen that. It takes some obedience sometimes, some trust. Verse 6, and it came to pass when the vessels were full. Well, I bet she was surprised. That she said unto her son, bring me yet a vessel. Bring me another one. And he said unto her, there is not a vessel more. We filled every one of them up. No more empty vessels. And the oil stayed. You know what that means? It stopped. Why did it stop? That's right. Wouldn't have been any need for it to keep going. She didn't have nothing else to put it in. All the vessels are full. She had enough with what she had at this point to take care of the debt as well as to live on. Because look at what it says, verse 7. Then she came and told the man of God, that's Elisha, and he said, go, sell the oil, and pay thy debt, number one, and live thou and thy children of the rest. you pay your debt, and then you live off what's left. So not only, you know, here's a lady who comes, and all she's trying to do is figure a way not to lose her sons. And just because God is so good, because he's so wonderful, not only does he fix the problem of her debt, but that woman is set, according to this, for the rest of her life. You see that? Pay your debt and then y'all live off the rest of it. I don't know how much she got, but evidently she got a pretty good chunk of change. Because she could pay whatever she owed and then her and her boys could live off of that. Or at least they could live until her sons got old enough to make their own money and help her mama out, one or the other. But God took care of her problem and then some is what he did. He blessed her even beyond what the need was. He took care of her. But I would point this out. He said, go sell the oil and pay thy debt, and live thou and thy children of the rest. You know what he told her to do first? You owe that, you pay it. If you have a debt, you know what God expects you to do? He expects you to pay that debt. If you can, if it's all possible, you need to pay that debt. And you need to do everything you can to do it. Don't take it lightly. You need to do everything that you can to do it. If it means selling something you have that's of value, if it means working extra hours, if it means giving up something that's important to you, whatever you got to do to pay your bills, to pay the debt that you owe. And I'm surprised that these people who you know, incur all these debts, they go out and they get money from this person, borrow from this bank, run up all this stuff on this credit card. And then when that statement comes in the mail or the person comes expecting to be paid back, they act like that person's a criminal or something. They act like they did something wrong, you know. Why are they bugging me? Why are they calling me on the phone? Well, you ain't paid your bill the last 3 months. That's why they calling you on the phone. Now, you answer me, have they done wrong? No. If I run up the debt, then who's it on to pay the debt? It ain't on the government. It ain't their responsibility. It ain't somebody else's. It's on me. And I need to do whatever I can. And I realize people get in situations, you know, they have health issues and all that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about these people who just borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow and then waste money and they're frivolous and they get yourself in a bad way. And then when people expect to be paid what they owe, they get all mad and they act like that person's a bad person. I can't believe they're being so hard on me. Well, maybe they can't believe that you borrowed money and you're not trying to pay it back. You know what I mean? I think it's kind of a thing of integrity and honesty. You know, if I borrow something from you, whether it's money or whatever, if I borrow it from you and I say, I'm going to give you this back or I'm going to pay you back, then that's my word. It's a matter of integrity. Are you going to do what you said you would do? You know what Elisha could have said? You know, he just said, well, you know, your husband incurred that debt before he died. Don't worry about it. Just don't worry about that. But that ain't what the man of God, verse 7, that ain't what the man of God told her to do. The man of God said the first thing you do before you start living is you go pay your debt. And then when you get through paying your debt, then you and your sons live off of what's left. Amen. Verse number 8. And it fell on a day that Elisha passed to Shunem. Shunem was in the inheritance, the part of the inheritance that belonged to Issachar. Whenever the land was doled out, when the lots were given out for the people of Israel, Issachar got a certain amount like the other tribes did. And Shunem was in the part that belonged to Issachar. And it says, where was a great woman. Read what that means. Reckon great like really smart, really wealthy, or really heavy. Reckon what it means. I think it means that she was really wealthy and important is what I believe. Because I'm not going anywhere around talking about a woman's weight, okay? That's just not what I'm going to do. I've heard people, so many people tell me, you don't ever ask a woman how old she is. And that's, you know, it's probably true up to a certain point. I think that changes as you get up, you know, in your senior years, because you get up, you know, 70, 80 years old, you start then being proud of the fact that you're 70 or 80 years old. I'm this old and I'm still alive, you know, so you don't mind it. But when they're younger, you don't ask a lady about her age. But more important to most of them, their age is that weight. If you really want to get in trouble, you ask a woman about her weight, you can get in trouble in a hurry. Men, you know better. You know better when your wife says, "Do I look fat in this?" They never look fat, do they? Or if they do, you better not say it. Just keep that teasing. "Oh, baby, you look great. You just look wonderful." So when it says she was a great woman, I think it just means that she was a woman of importance in this town here. She might have been wealthy. I don't know. But her name is not given just like the other. And it says she constrained him, that's Elisha, to eat bread. Constrained is a word that shows up several times in the Bible. And if you take the C-O-N off the front and the E-D off the end, you got the word strain. Constrain. When you constrain somebody, if you look up the word, it means that you kind of press upon somebody to do something. You really are kind of forceful with them, almost like you push them to do something, force them to do something. It's not just a casual, "Would you come and eat bread?" And they say no. Okay, that's fine. It's, "Would you come eat bread?" "No, I don't believe I will." "Yes, I want you to. I'm just not going to take no for an answer now. You're going to come and you're going to eat bread with me." You know what I mean? Well, that's constrained. When he says the first time, "Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, but I believe I'll just keep going." No, we got plenty. I want you to. "No, I appreciate it, but I'm not taking no for an answer. You're going to come eat bread with me." That's really what's going on here. Because it says she constrained him. That means he probably turned down the offer a few times, but she wouldn't take no for an answer. So it says that as often as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. He just figured, "Hey, I don't need an argument with her. Pass through there. I'm going to stop and eat me some bread." And that's right. He probably enjoyed it very much. And so when he would pass through Shunem, whenever he would come through there, and evidently his responsibility took him through Shunem quite often, because in verse 9 it talks about how he passed by there continually. So he's taking this route going through Shunem, and as he goes through there, he's obviously met this woman now. He's been there and had bread. She's been good to him, so he just stops in there. It's kind of like a little rest stop for him, and he gets bread. And you couldn't do that nowadays. You know, you couldn't do that. Preacher, you know, every time he comes through a town on the way to a meeting or something, and he stops at the same woman's house and eats bread with her. I mean, I'm serious, a heart attack. You know where that would go, don't you? You couldn't do that kind of thing now, because then they'd have him and her fooling around with one another and that sort of thing. I mean, I'm just serious, a heart attack. That's how people are. People today just looking to pin something on you. They just want to. Their mind automatically goes to the gutter. Their mind automatically goes to a bad spot, especially if it's a preacher they don't like. If they got a bone to pick with him, then they're going to look for something they can hang on him, some gossip to start, some thing they can get going against him. And, man, every time he comes through town, he's at that woman's house. That's how that would be nowadays. Can't do that. Verse 9 says, "And she said unto her husband, Behold now, I perceive that this is an holy man of God." I perceive. He spent some time in her home, been there around her and her family. just by watching him, listening to the things he said, conversations they've had. She's picking up, hey, this fella right here, he's the real deal. This is not just a man of God. This is a holy man of God. He's the real deal. He's not one of these guys that we've been watching on TV, you know, just wanting to get our money all the time. This is a real man of God here. She's picking up on that. And, you know, when you are around somebody enough, spend time with them, talk with them, fellowship with them, whether you're talking about a preacher or whatever, you start perceiving things about them, don't you? You start picking up on things. The more conversations you have, you start picking up, well, this is something they like or this is something they don't like or whatever. You're able to perceive that, and then you watch how they conduct themselves, the way they live their life, and that says a lot about them. It tells you a whole lot when you just watch their life and how they conduct themselves. When you get over in the New Testament, when you start reading about John the Baptist, it says about Herod. It says that Herod observed him. He observed him. You know what that means? That means Herod was watching John, just paying attention to him, checking him out. And Herod realized there was something about that man, something about him. And when people spend time with us and around us, they see how we act, they hear the things we talk about, they pick up on stuff. And in this situation, she's picked up, hey, this is a real deal here. He's a man of God. And so she says this to her husband, let us make a little chamber, I pray thee. Notice how polite and respectful she is to her husband. And I'm not just saying that. I'm serious. You notice how this lady's speaking with her husband. She's being very kind. And she's not just coming there saying, hey, I'm in charge around here. We've been having this fellow over here, and this is what we're going to do. That's how a lot of people talk now. A lot of wives talk to their husbands, you know. We're going to do what I say around here. Well, she didn't do that. She says, let us make a little chamber, I pray thee. She's being nice. Y'all watch it out there. I see y'all bumping one another. Well, there's nothing wrong with being nice, right? Nothing wrong with being respectful and polite when you talk to somebody, and especially when you're talking to your spouse. But she says, I pray thee, on the wall. That's going to be the wall of the city. Most all of the cities had walls around them. And they were not just like a little thin wall. Some of them were very thick walls, and people's homes were actually in the wall of the city. For example, do y'all remember the story about Rahab the harlot in the Bible? Y'all remember that story? Well, if you read that, you'll find that Rahab lived in the wall of the city. That's where her home was. So some of these people lived in the wall, literally in the wall of the city. And so she says, on the wall, and let us set for him there in this little chamber a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick. Just basic necessities where he can have a little, like a little motel room, just a little place where he can rest. He's traveling through. He stops by to eat some bread. He can go in there. He can spend the night if he needs to, get some rest, just have his little chamber. And perhaps you've heard me or other preachers or other people say something about a prophet's chamber before. We've talked before about how our parsonage, and now we use that like for a prophet's chamber. Well, this is where you get that from, that terminology, prophet's chamber. Elisha was a prophet of God, and they make a little chamber, verse 10, just a little room, little place. So that's where you get that terminology, the prophet's chamber. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick. And it shall be, when he cometh through us, that he shall turn in thither. He can come in there and stay. So they're being real good to this man of God. They're being real good to Elisha, right? Treating him good. And it fell on a day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. So he's in there, you know, taking some rest. And he said, Elisha said to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite. And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said unto him, Elisha said unto Gehazi, say now unto her, the Shunammite woman, behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. What is to be done for thee? Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host? And she answered, I dwell among mine own people. He recognizes the kindness that this lady and her family has shown him. And so he has her brought in. He says, what can I do for you? You know, you've been so good to us. What can I do for you? And he offers to speak on her behalf to the king. Maybe to have the king, you know, show them some type of favor or bring them in more into the royal city and let them be there under his watch, care, and protection. Or to the captain of the host. That'd be the captain of the king's host over the army. But she says, I dwell among mine own people. I don't want that. You know, I don't want to go in and, you know, be there in the city. I just want to live right here with my people. That's where I want to stay at. And he said, what then is to be done for her? He's asking Gehazi. And Gehazi answered, verily she hath no child, and her husband is old. And he said, call her. And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And he said, about this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son. And she said, nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thine handmaid. We say things like, you know, don't be pulling my leg now. Don't be kidding around with me. Don't be joking. Don't be lying to me. You know, tell me the truth. That's she's doesn't have a child, and he's saying, you're gonna have a son. And she's like, no, you know, don't be playing with me now. Don't be jerking me around. You be straight with me. Don't say that if it ain't going to happen. Don't get my hope built up and me thinking that I'm going to have a son and me not have one. You don't do me like that. And the woman conceived and bare a son at that season that Elisha had said unto her according to the time of life. That's according to the time that it takes for a woman to conceive and bear a son or bear a child. So Elisha's reward for her generosity and her kindness is that she's going to get to have a child. She hadn't had one, and it didn't look like she was going to have one, but God worked it out where she got to have her own son. This is another miracle. The Lord works his thing out, and it happens exactly in the time that Elisha said it was going to happen. So she gets her son. Now we're going to stop here because we're about out of time. We'll finish up this story when we come back on Sunday night, Lord willing. We'll see what happens from here. Any questions about what we looked at tonight?